I'm Lucy Green, a professor of physics in UCL's Department of Space and Climate Physics, where my passion is for the sun, our star that is centrally important to all of our lives. And as a scientist, I'm committed to achieving a sustainable future. Now, as the National Trust moves towards its 2021 target of generating 50% of its power from renewable sources, I'll be taking a 750-mile trip around England and Wales to look at five of more than 100 renewable energy schemes that are being worked on across the Trust. This may give us some insight into what a sustainable energy future could look like for all of us. One of the partners helping achieve this goal is BMWI, who are helping enhance renewable energy technology at the places the National Trust care for and enabling visitors to charge their cars at more of the properties. They've also supplied us with an all-electric BMW i3 for the journey, and they have helped bring this podcast to you. I've been visiting National Trust properties for years, but one thing I've not done until now is actually spend a night on site in one of their holiday cottages. And here at Fellbrigg and neighbouring Sheringham are the resources to provide you with heat and hot water, not only within the holiday cottages themselves, but also on site with the catering facilities, offices and other properties on these grounds. After a toasty night in and a comforting cup of tea, it was time to leave the cosy confines of my holiday cottage and face the elements of a bracing autumn day. Just a stone's throw from my accommodation is the renewable energy project that heats some of the buildings here at Fellbrigg. And it uses a source of energy that you might not be expecting. It uses wood. And to tell me more, hi, Rebecca.
Hello, nice to meet you.
Good to meet you too. I'm Lucy, and Hello. You are the Senior Facilities Manager
here. I am, yes.
So I'd very much like to learn more, but it's so noisy out here. Planes are going overhead. Can we go inside?
Yes, unfortunately, it's circling round above
us. More. You're near an Air Force base.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is the shed I've been looking at from my bedroom window.
Sure, yes, this is. So here is our biomass boiler.
Now, this boiler uses wood, but biomass is a bit of a catch-all term, isn't it? It could be a range of materials.
It could be a range of materials. Anything that we could use to produce energy.
Wood and crops are the main sources of biomass, but rubbish, methane from landfill, and even animal and human waste can be used. Burning organic matter will, of course, release carbon, but as new trees and crops are grown, they will reabsorb that carbon dioxide, creating a closed loop. There are, however, some downsides to biomass, because depending on the type or source of the fuel, carbon may not be recaptured in a timely manner, and some fear that in places it could contribute to deforestation. It can require a lot of space to grow fuel, and in some cases it can be expensive. I think it's probably fair to say that biomass is one of the more controversial forms of renewable energy, because it could involve using wood that's been cut down from forests, fed into the boiler, and obviously carbon dioxide is released. Are those things that you think about here at the National Trust?
Oh, certainly, without a doubt. Yes, we do. We do use wood. In our situation, we use our wood from our trees. We chip the wood. We're not burning huge logs.
And is it a more efficient process then than burning logs? Is that the reason why you chip it down?
Yes, absolutely right, yeah. It's not a big roaring fire. It has to be burnt slowly. Because the boiler knows exactly what's being loaded into it and the temperatures that it needs to achieve, it only feeds through the wood that it requires to reach the temperatures and to do what it needs to do. It works for us in a lot of ways. This boiler has an internet connection and tells each thermostat what to do.
I think it's clear that this is a really efficient boiler, but I still can't get away from the fact that trees still need to be chopped down to be fed into it.
Sure, I understand that. And to be fair, we get asked that quite a lot. But the thing is, those trees would need to be maintained in our woodland for environmental reasons. But I think you need to maybe go and reach our countryside manager, because he can take you through the process of what is involved.
I'm going to head off and find your countryside manager.
Okay. So
thanks again.
Lovely.
Have a good rest
you.
Of the day.
Yes.
Bye.
Take care.
Please say the desired address or a point of interest.
Sheringham.
Sheringham was selected.
Ah, great.
just 12 minutes away. Sheringham was the first of two properties to trial biomass, and because it was so successful, a larger implementation was installed in Fellbrigg. And driving between the locations, I'm surrounded by trees on both sides, which just highlights the potential that there is in these woodlands to provide biomass fuels for sites like Fellbrigg and Sheringham. I've been told to pull up on the far side of the building where I can meet Countryside manager Richard. I've taken a lovely long walk into the heart of the estate. I'm surrounded by beautiful woodland and I'm planning to meet Richard Daplin, who is the Countryside manager here. Hi, Richard.
Hi. You found me then?
I did. Oh, it's lovely walking across this. One of the concerns I have about wood biomass is related to clearing woodland areas in order to provide the wood. What's the National Trust's approach?
It's a byproduct of our woodland management. We produce quite a lot of wood, fairly obviously. We will sell the bottom end of the trees and then we will chip the top end that's worth less. So we're using something that would have just been going basically for pulp.
When I walked onto the site to find you, I passed some pretty big piles of wood that sort of stretched down the road. Is that wood that's going to then become part of the biomass?
Yes, it's largely non-natives that we're chipping for wood. One of the things we're doing at the minute is using a thing called continuous cover forestry. You thin areas quite heavily to get light in, which allows the younger trees to grow. They will come up, and if you keep doing that on a regular basis, you get a much more natural woodland with all sorts of ages of tree across the area, and it looks much more natural and user-friendly than coming in every 60 years or so and chopping the whole lot down.
And we're in quite a large woodland here. I mean, how does the scale of this and what you can naturally thin compare to what you actually need to power the Fellbrigg site?
It's tiny. We need about 120 tonnes of wood to heat Fellbrigg a year. We are currently thinning about 800 or 900 tonnes a year.
Actually, very sensible usage of the natural resources you have on the doorstep.
Absolutely.
And when it comes to the processes, so you talked about thinning, is that the main one or are there other processes you use?
If you go far enough back, this was a coppice area. Do you know what coppicing is?
To call something a coppice itself, I'm not so familiar with.
Coppicing is the age-old practice of managing woodland, where trees in a specific area are cut down to their stumps. And as new shoots grow, they are periodically harvested. And this rapidly growing and sustainable wood can be used for anything from wicker baskets, fencing, furniture, or firewood, depending on the interval between each harvest. The area in which this happens is called a coppice.
And here is our coppice.
And I can see that there's some work going on here. Tell me about the work.
A previous owner decided to put conifers, so the conifers have been heavily shading the coppice out. We've decided to release the coppice, opening the whole area up. If you look just over here, you can see a coop, and a small area of coppice is called a coop, that was done 3 years ago. You can see the stools are back up to, well, it's places 5 metres or so in 3 years. It's much quicker than if you planted.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you've left the roots
yes,
in place. And
absolutely. They've got that back. Hit. As soon as you cut, they've got that real hit of energy to come back in the next spring. If we're burning a small percentage of that, then actually it's regrowing here, so there's actually more carbon being taken up within the regrowing stools
than is being emitted
yeah.
through the burning.
And also, of course, the ground itself is increasing the amount of leaf mould on here and the depth of the litter and dead wood that's lying about in here, so that's also locking up carbon to quite a great extent. So actually, yeah, it's a really environmentally and sustainable way of managing woodland.
What's the next step in the journey of this wood?
The next step is that the wood will go over to the store at Sheringham, our neighbouring property. So you might want to go and talk to the guys that are busily loading over there at the moment.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Richard.
That's okay.
Enjoy the rest of your time in this beautiful woodland.
Thank you.
I'll see you later.
Bye.
As I emerge from the woodland, I'm confronted with a huge building that holds the wood chip for Felbrigg and Sheringham.
I've come to a rather beautiful old barn and I've been instructed I'm going to help with moving the wood chips. Okay, I can hear the sound of shoveling, which must mean I'm close. Hi, Mark. So I've come to give you a hand.
Very kind of you.
That is a big pile of wood chip. It's like a two-storey building inside this barn. How much can you store in this area?
What we put in, we think, is 100 tonnes.
How has it impacted you and your role here? Has it added a lot more work?
Part of my 5 days is biomass, so one day a week.
And that compares to how much time that you would have spent, say, if it was a regular oil-fired boiler?
If you want to do time and probably slightly cheaper, would be oil, because you get a contract firm to fill your tanks up, so you virtually wouldn't necessarily even have anything to do with them. For us, biomass probably wasn't very cost-effective at the beginning and the little teething problems we had, but as we're using it more and more, we are actually bringing the cost down. From a wildlife perspective, it's brilliant, and it's managing the woodlands, and we're also using our own material, so we're not having to ship it from either America or Siberia. We can get it from less than 6 miles away. I live local, and it's nice actually trying to get the woodlands back to looking nicer. I like wildlife quite a lot, and bird watching and butterflies. And if you go to a lot of the pine forests, which we're now thinning and taking down, there's not really much wildlife. There's not many flowers in there. There's not much deer and things. It's quite dark and dense. And there's not much ground cover. But if you go and look where we've been and where we've cut it down, there's butterflies in there, there's deer in there, we have snakes, we have lots of different wildlife. There's more things now where we've cleaned the block out and turned it to mixed hardwood rather than just conifers.
Okay, well, there's a huge pile of wood chip in front of us. I want to give you a hand moving it. What job can you give me?
Well, at the moment, basically, we've got
a shovel
and a brush, I'm afraid.
Okay, let's go for it.
With the truck loaded, it was time to make our delivery.
So I'm back at Felbrigg, and Mark, let's get these chips unloaded.
Yes.
Is everything done now, Mark?
Yep, that's another load put in, and now they will have hot water and heating for another week.
I mean, it's been really good to see what's happening here on this site in Felbrigg, and it makes me think how each of the National Trust properties I've been to have played to their strengths. So they've looked at what's needed and they've looked at what's available locally, and I can see now that biomass is absolutely right for this site here. But do you think there's any chance of rolling it out across the wider estate?
I think it would be quite hard to do where buildings are on their own. You couldn't justify or be cost effective to just have one boiler for one house. Where we've got them at Felbrigg, you've got a cluster of places. So you've got catering, holiday cottages, offices. So it's quite a big area, but in a small compact space. If you went further away, it would be quite expensive for the results you'd get.
Are there still plans then for sort of future development?
We're looking into sourcing other means for places that are away from our buildings so they can still be greener and away from fuel oil, possibly solar or ground source or air source heating, just basically trying to get away from fuel oil, which is not very good for the planet. We have electric charging points at both properties, and there's for no reason, if technology changes, that we could actually change our diesel truck to something electric or something greener, hybrid, that would actually be even better for the environment.
I mean, that definitely seems like the next step. Yeah. Is that something that's realistic within the coming years? Are those sort of products coming to the
market? I think as the technology comes and you can guarantee the product could actually do what it wants to do through batteries or whatever.
I really like the fact that it sort of is, it fits with the ethos of the National Trust, it fits with the passions of the people who work here and the people who volunteer here, and the benefits go far beyond what you would initially imagine. Well, thank you very much, Mark, for taking the time out to show me what your job involves. I just hope I've helped you a little bit today.
Yes, you have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm leaving Felbrigg now, and I'm nearly through my journey across National Trust properties. I've just got one more to go. Felbrigg has really helped me sort of understand how each particular site has been through a really rigorous process of thinking about what their energy needs are, what their buildings are like, and how you take the needs of each individual property and compare that to what the opportunities are. So what are the local things in the area that can be used? It's not necessarily straightforward to think about a sustainable future. I've seen that there are some controversial areas, but actually that can still be right for the local property because you're able to tailor it to the particular needs and to the particular resources that are available. So you shouldn't be writing off one form of renewable energy over another. You've really got to look through what the options are and find out what's best for that individual site.
The final leg of my road trip takes me 191 miles north to Hardcastle Crags in West Yorkshire, a property that has put all of the technologies we've been learning about together and is now the Trust's first off-grid property, sourcing 100% of its energy needs from renewables generated on-site. You can find more episodes of 50% Renewable on all major podcast directories or on our website at nationaltrust.org.uk/50%. That's 50PERCENT, where you'll also find information about what steps you can take to use water in a more sustainable way. This is 50% Renewable, a podcast from the National Trust. The production of this podcast has been made possible by BMWi, exclusive automotive partner for the National Trust.